Welcome to the official Leverage Redemption After Show, a very distinctive podcast here on Electric Now. I am Yael Teagle. I'm joined as always by my incredible co-host, Felicia Michelle.
Hey, Yael.
Hello. I'm so excited. Today we are chatting with co-showrunner and executive producer Kate Rourke. We have the writers of this episode. We have games. We have bingo. We have everything in this episode, so don't miss it. But first, we are talking about season one, episode five, The Paranormal Hectivity Job. I'm so excited.
Girl power. Girl power. Paper episode all season.
Yes. If you have not seen this episode yet, consider this your spoiler warning. We don't know what you're waiting for, but please go back and watch it. And if you've binged the season already, now is a good time to watch along with us.
Rewatch, because you literally will miss something. Like I rewatch, I'm like, oh, I missed that. The smallest things in Leverage Redemption make the biggest differences.
Yeah. So let's jump into it. Do you have the quick cap for us?
Okay, here is the quick cap for you. Okay, when a woman believes she is being haunted and runs from her home in terror, Sophie leads Brianna and Parker through a con to convince the two real estate scammers responsible to target Leverage HQ. It was crazy. So many layers in that episode.
Yeah. How did you feel about this episode? Is it one of your favorites?
No, it is, because it was like girl power. Like, I'm ultra, like, all about the girls. Well, I did miss the punches and the hair flips, and I did the novice things that Harry says. I really love the girls all together.
Yeah, I really like this episode as well, because I'm a big Halloween fan, just like Brianna, although she seems to be more into like horror Halloween, and I'm more into like costume Halloween.
No, it's Sophie. Hey, can you scale it back just a little bit? Just a little bit. My favorite part is when she's counting on her, we need this, and it's like the hand with the fingers on it.
Yes. So this episode starts with our victim, Tina, who lost her Aunt Mildred, and is haunted out of her own home.
No, seriously, you know I don't, not into the occult, horror, that's not really my thing. So I was like, how is this going to, but then I was like, it's always smoke and mirrors in Leverage. And so it was kind of like terrifying, but it set a perfect scene to just like, I have to watch this episode. Like, I'm going to sit down and concentrate fully on this episode, because what the heck?
Yeah, I agree. I think one of the fun things when you watch a show, I watch a lot of sci-fi, so when you watch a show that is not sci-fi and something sci-fi happens, you're like, wait, no, we have to explain this. There's no way this is an actual haunting. But how was it done?
Poor girl. She was terrified, like, out of her mind. Like, can you imagine? And then finding out the backstory, everything just, like, really made sense. One thing I really loved, with Leverage, it's like mind games, right? And everything is about perception, and perception is reality. So much so that everything is a mind game, where Parker even tells Brianna, hey, don't tell her that she's wrong. Let it be, because she believes it to be true. And the more you push her to tell her that it's wrong or something's going on, she will be convinced that this is the actual truth. So let it be.
Absolutely. It's one of these things where people want to believe what they want to believe. And as they are shown proof, they dig their heels in deeper. We'll talk a little bit more about that when we get to bingo. But I love this idea that we have to show her so that she can put it together herself. I think that's a really beautiful way to help someone get to the truth.
That's actually some good old life advice, okay? Because me, I'm like, no, that's not it. No, that's not it. And I've found, like, why are you not understanding what I'm saying? I'm presenting facts here. But now that psychology tip, I'm going to definitely use that in my personal life.
Yeah. So we find out that there is a real estate scam that is happening to Tina. I really like it when they are up against other con artists or other thieves. Like, I don't know why, that's something I really love in this show.
No, I mean, because you want to see who is the baddest of the bad. You know, kind of like, they're going to get you.
Yeah, so we have this real estate scam. It's Deke and Lyle Herbert. And what they do is they find a house of somebody who passed. They case it, essentially, at the memorial, which is... heartless.
People do that.
Yeah.
People do that.
But it's so heartless. That's not the time.
They're scammers. Poor Deke, because I feel like all he really wants to do is go back to design school. He doesn't want to do this.
Right.
He doesn't want to. I feel kind of bad for him.
Yeah, I agree with you. But it's nice that we found the weak link so early. And what's even more exciting is we do this whole Big Daddy death situation. And it leads us to the actual villain, which is an assassin known as the Wraith, who is a hitman.
And a baby, and a big old baby.
Right.
Like, how did you just turn to, like, mush so fast? Like, you've literally killed some very high-profile people, mm-hmm. and you're scared. But it's just, again, the adage of leverage, like, what the karma of it all. Like, what you do right. will come back to you.
Well, the thing is, the Wraith says, I have it written because I think it was so good. You don't mess with the afterlife. It might mess back because he didn't cause their death. He's just a weapon.
That's very much like Harry logic. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not on a side. I'm just doing my job.
Yes.
And it's like, no, your job is leaning towards a certain side and what, you know, and what you do. So I thought that was funny because it kind of reminded me, even though Harry was in this episode, it reminded me of Harry.
Absolutely. It's very Harry-like, except that he's an assassin. He doesn't cause their death. Yes, you do. You are the cause of death.
I wonder what his backstory is and why he is the way he is.
All right. Well, let's go back a little bit. I want to talk about Sophie's character of Estella.
When she does, yeah, there is no one else that will be able to. And Parker did a really good job. But the Southern Belle is Sophie's and Sophie's alone. Like, that's it.
That's the funniest sweet spot. Southern Belle I've ever seen. I just, every time she said, Big Daddy.
My favorite part is when she goes, and he fell right here on this bar. Like, just like right here. And she just is spooking our first two scammers. It's funny.
I think when she comes out of the room and that she goes, Big Daddy, is that you? That's the part. Kills me.
No, when she's waiting for the lights to flicker.
Yeah.
And she's like, and then she's like, oh, what happened? Love it. Classic.
I think I even wrote down, Big Daddy wanted me to have this place. Short of him telling me to go, I'll stay. I would like to grow up to be Estella. That's who I want to be when I grow up.
I'm from South Jersey, so like it's not possible for me. Like it's impossible. Maybe for you there's hope.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
That's it. I'm moving to New Orleans. I'm going to start referring to everybody as Big Daddy.
I mean, the crazy part about, well, not the crazy part, but it is very fitting that it's in Louisiana. And Louisiana has, you know, a long history of like voodoo and different like occult. Like people mm-hmm. who are like love the occult love to go to New Orleans because of just the history there. And I mean, the unfortunate history and why a lot of the places they feel like are haunted or different things like that. So it made perfect sense. Mm-hmm. And then for it to be on Halloween, I was like, oh, they lined this up like way too good.
Yeah.
Way too good.
I agree. And I think that what surprised me is that Deke and Lyle, that they do this scam in Jersey. I was like, but this seems like it wouldn't work in Jersey.
From your resident Jersey, person, it wouldn't work because you'd be like, what are you doing here? Who do you know?
Right.
Like, what's going on? Like, the accent's probably going to get real thick with you and asking you, what are you doing here? Like, you need to get out of here. Like, whose mans are you? Like,
right.
Where did you go? So it's just, but it's interesting how they do it, though. You know, they come at the end of the memorial. Mm. You know, they try to make sure not a lot of people are around. And we know that the writers in Leverage Redemption are so thoughtful that I know that this has to be a mirror almost probably to what people actually do because they don't want to get caught out.
Right.
You know, friends and family are very protective of people who are mourning or in grief. So you want to have as little people around as possible. So I thought about that. I said, wow, we're kind of getting educated on a real con, even though we're watching, you know, a television show.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this show is edutainment sometimes.
I mean, no, seriously, a lot of times.
So let's talk about the whole point of their con is to get a space specifically on the Halloween parade route because the Wraith has a job to do. But previously he killed the Cardinal.
I know.
Sorry, like, the way she says it. The witness in witness protection. And an inmate, that poor man. So I love that. I love that we have a bigger purpose to this, especially because earlier on when Sophie is pulling her con on the con men and it's going so well, they're like, yeah, better con men would have realized this.
Yeah.
And interestingly, Deke noticed.
Well, I think Deke should have probably realized when he was trying to open up the circuit breaker box thing that, and then it wouldn't, and then it just popped open. That was a hilarious scene. And I also, that was really noteworthy because I think this is the first time that, I really noticed that Brianna was like, no, I believe this. I think this. I don't want to do this. Mm-hmm. And was confidently telling the team members that, like, hey, no, I don't want to do this. I don't think this is a good move for whatever reason, for majority reasons, whatever. So it was like more her coming into her own. Right. And like her self-confidence has. And I don't know if it's the spirit of Halloween that got into her. And like, but I enjoyed watching her character like kind of say, hey, this is what I think is right, even though, you know, I'm going to have to go along and do what you said because, you know, y'all are the big bosses. But I'm going to stand up for myself and what I think is right in this con.
So Deke kills Sophie.
Poor baby.
In this moment, I was like, they got him. They got him. They turned him. We're in. We got the whole team all in. Did you at any point think Sophie was dead?
I think when you see one of your most beloved characters of the show and then you see a knife and then it has blood on it, it kind of, but obviously because I know that they just can't do that. You won't do that, right? Right? You will never kill her off, please. I just was like, oh, it's probably not. And also, too, it's never as it seems in this show. Right. So you just have to, like, hold your horses and not jump to conclusions. Because even when you think you know, you don't know.
Honestly, the only time I actually thought a character died was the series finale of Original Leverage. And I cried. Every time I watch it, I cry. But this time I was like, nope, I don't believe it. They turned him. And I think I even turned to my roommate and I said, watch, they turned him. And he was like, obviously. But I was like, no, I have to say this out loud.
You could tell that he had a, you know, like a good heart. Mm-hmm. And it was just in a situation based off of circumstances of his father passing away and his uncle needing someone to kind of like keep that going. And that he had other things that he really wanted to do. And what our team is exceptional at is reading people. Yeah. And that's not just like reading the bad people to know what they're going to do, but also reading to know if someone has good in them. Because if they can see the good in themselves, then they can definitely see the good in other people. So they, you know, they spotted it in him and a weakness.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. I think you're totally right. And the fact that he was able to get turned so quickly to be on their side and then perform properly was really a surprise, because I feel like up until that point when we saw him with his, you know, with Lyle, Deke was like struggling.
Uncertainty yes. was definitely his vibe.
But now that he was like, oh, they're going to get me out and they know what's happening and everything's cool, he was like, I'm in. I killed her.
I mean, no. And then the funny part about that is like, oh, so Brianna, you just have a blood bag on. Right. You just have, just happen to just have it right there.
It's Halloween. So they head upstairs because the wreath is going to take this shot. And we have these beautiful projections. Brianna, I feel like this was the episode that showcased her skill set the most, because she was not only building as it happened, but was having a good time doing it and was improvising and really like killed it with this.
No, she did. It's funny when she's like moving all the wires and stuff around. She's like, ugh. Alex, come on, like, come on, like, what, come on, man, like, you can just made it simple. But it's like that childlike thing about her character. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to call her a child because she's not a child, but in, you know, relation to how the age of the other people on the team, she kind of is. But I love that about her, because it keeps her, she's fascinated. Yeah. At every turn, even when she makes mistakes, she's just super like zoned in, and she's like having a good time. You could tell like her character's having a good time with this. She's like, oh, I get to torture people with technology. Yay. So excited.
I absolutely love it. And I think that the way that they wrap this story up is so beautiful. With Tina goes to get the police. I like that Parker repels her down. That was so great.
Tina was like, I don't know about this.
Right, why are we going up? They scare away the wraith, and then everyone confesses. I love it. Lyle spontaneously confesses to fraud. The wraith is like, get me out of here. It's really beautiful. And then we have the scene where, you know, the guys are back, and we have Elliot impressed. He's impressed. He says, you took down an international assassin using a haunted house.
No, seriously, though. I mean, and then we also get like a good fight scene with Parker, which I very much enjoyed. Yes. Seeing that, because Elliot is usually always bringing our fist and hair flips. You know, I always say fist and hair flips. And that's where we're usually getting that action from. We don't usually get to see her in as many like combat kind of situations right. as I was probably like to. But she didn't. She's amazing. I mean, Beth, seriously, like phenomenal athlete, amazing.
This episode, I think one of the things I love the most about it is that it is the girl power episode. It is the women. And it reminds me, as we know, in the original series, there was Girls Night Out job, Boys Night Out job that were partnered. I'm going to assume that this means that there is a boys job that we will probably get in the back eight. That is an assumption that I am making.
That's a prediction.
Yes.
That's a that's a good prediction, too. I love that. I mean, it makes sense. It would be balanced.
Right.
That would be leverage. It would make sense to do that. No?
Yeah, absolutely. But I really think, you know, I know this is a fan favorite episode and it is so beloved. And I think it's so interesting that it's so beloved and it's only half the team.
You know what? I think this is like one of those episodes that when people look back, because I believe that, like, because I mean, maybe I'm biased and that's okay, because I love the show and I love the team, that there will be more seasons, but that this episode particularly will stand out because it is that first time that we see just the girls together in this resurgence of leverage. So I think it'll stand out. I mean, it already has.
Right. And I think you're right. And I love the way that, you know, even though everyone on the team has their skill set, when we have only half the team, the fact that they're able to accomplish this entire job themselves is really impressive.
And can we also point out, too, that just the scenario and how it's set up, usually when women are by themselves in a home alone, people think that's the most danger. There's nobody around. And these girls... handled them.
Oh, man.
Handled them.
So handled.
Handled them.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. They were stronger than I would have been, that's for sure.
Well, you know, I would have been, like, probably in the closet or something, because I don't like Halloween stuff already. And,
wow.
Like, I'm, like, a lookout. Like, that's my, like, I'll look, and I'll tell you what's going on. Like, I'm a air traffic controller.
I see.
I'm not really, like... in the action, and that's okay. That's why I'm not on the team.
I want to talk about the specific tactics that they use, the sound effects and the way that they projected the words. At any point,
love it.
Yeah, what did you think of those?
This season period, it seems like the mind is the battlefield, right? You know, and they got into his head. He let one thing slip out, and they were like, "Oh, we're about to just go ahead and mentally mess you up. Like, this is it for you.
Yeah.
And this is your retribution for all the things that you did, because, like he said, the afterlife deals with you." And it came back to him. I just think it was just so smart, just in listening to just one thing he said, and it changed the complete way they approached the conflict. That's not even the con, really just trying to escape him.
Right.
That wasn't even a part of the con. They didn't know he was coming.
Yeah. I think you're so right. And this season really is, it is a lot of mental.
Like the guy who had the faulty tower and they made him think that the building was coming down again. Mm-hmm. And like instead of hurting people in necessarily a physical way, which they do get hurt in a physical way.
Right.
We see that a lot. But messing them up in their mind to distort their thinking and how they would normally maneuver just really puts the team at such an advantage. I like it. I mean, they deserve it.
Right.
Bad person.
Right. Not only did Deke and Lyle deserve it for, you know, what they did to Tina and what they did to a lot of people, you know, forcing them out of their home.
Disgusting.
But the Wraith isn't a set. He's a hitman.
The best part about it is that, like, what they did with the first couple, like, illusions had nothing compared to what Rihanna brought to the table. Like, it was just literally, that's some, like, the first, how they confused the young lady in the beginning. Like, okay, we saw the little words pop up on
right.
the wall. And it was like, okay, this looks like something you maybe get from, like, Amazon or
sure.
something like that. But Rihanna just was, like, top notch. Like, oh. This is real. Ghosts are real.
Right.
She did an amazing job.
She did. And she didn't use any candles. And she did not burn down the house.
Seriously, though.
Yeah. Very impressive. We have still so much more to talk about. We are going to talk to the writers of this episode. So stick around. We'll be right back.
I am sitting with the writers of the Paranormal Hectivity Job. I am here with Elena Heim and Josh Scher. Hello. Welcome. I'm so excited to chat with you guys about this episode. Let's start with, where did the idea for this episode come from?
Basically, it's pretty simple. We were filming in New Orleans, and New Orleans is like the most haunted city in America. So it felt like, you know, you have to do a haunted house episode. That's just, I mean, kind of it. And then a lot of fun research about silly haunted house stories in New Orleans. And that was sort of where it came from.
A lot of research. I remember when, you know, when the idea first came up and it was like, all right, well, what does it mean to be the most haunted city in America? And, you know, we just started looking into things. And I remember there was a long, long time of sharing interesting stories of stuff we'd, you know, found.
So in this story, we not only have like a haunted house story, but we also have an assassin who's afraid of ghosts. How did that come to be? How did these two ideas merge?
We had the idea of the haunted house, you know, on our stages. We wanted to do a modified bottle episode. So we were sort of limited to what we already had to work with. And then, you know, remember, like this was at the end of the break, Elena. Like we the room was done. It was just a couple of us. It was you, me, Dean, Kate in the Zoom. And we just started batting around the idea. And assassin wasn't part of the original conceit. Uh-uh. It was more like, what could this building that we're in be used for? Because we knew we wanted the stakes raised of, we've got these bumbling, foolish con men. What can be the stakes raised that we didn't expect? Who are they setting this place up for? And that's when I think Kate was like, how about an assassin? And was like, boom, like we got it. Now let's build that in. And I think, you know, having him be afraid of ghosts was just sort of a, you know, everybody's got quirks. I don't care if you're the scariest, you know, assassin in the world. Everybody's got quirks.
What about the two of you? Are you afraid of ghosts? Do you believe in ghosts? Elena, I want to start with you.
I do believe in ghosts, mostly just because I feel like it's more fun to believe in ghosts than it is to not believe in ghosts. And if I ever make it to New Orleans, I'm going to do like 4 haunted tours. I'm going to find a ghost. Hopefully it's a not scary one, but I'll take my chances, I think.
That was another amazing part of the research here is I remember Elena sharing a whole bunch of links on how to make a haunted house. Mm-hmm. And we were watching videos and we were, you know, seeing how they did things at Disneyland and you know, really got into the technical nitty gritty of how to build one of these things. Do I believe in ghosts? I've lived in enough old houses in Los Angeles to feel like they're around me. Like there's inexplicable things that I can only, you know, lean into the idea that ghosts exist or it really doesn't make sense.
Wow. I was not expecting both of you to be like, yup, ghosts. I like it. So does that mean you're big Halloween fans, like Brianna, who is the biggest Halloween fan?
I like to do Halloween, Hollywood Horror Nights every year, find all the haunted houses. I love Halloween.
Oh, that's wonderful. Josh, you mentioned that this was kind of like a bottle episode. And as those of us who've seen the original Leverage know, there is a very beloved girls' night, boys' night pairing. Can we expect that this is the first half of a pairing?
If I recall correctly, it's not. There probably isn't an episode where it's like, well, this is happening at the same time in the, you know, in the boys' world, the way it was with Boys' Night, Girls' Night originally, where it was, you know, it was all sort of happening at once. There is a boys' episode. There is a mostly boys' episode coming up in the back eight, which is sort of a, you know, it's a brother-sister episode, but it's not happening at the temporally at the same moment.
Awesome. Elena, you mentioned that this was your first episode. Tell me about that. How do you feel? It's one of the one of the most beloved episodes of the first half.
It's pretty crazy. I do have a lot of photos from my friends of me standing in front of the TV next to my name. It was so, I mean, honestly, it was like very surreal when it got when Kate told me that I was going to write the episode with Josh. And then as I went through, it was just like, I mean, I just learned so much and everything was so much fun to do. And it was just, I mean, I feel like I'm babbling, but it was an amazing experience and I really loved it. And I'm happy that it got to be a haunted house episode, because that's, if I could choose something to write about forever, it would probably be haunted houses.
Awesome. Do you have any advice for first time writers?
Everyone talks about when you get your first episode and, you know, however that may come. I have to say, I am truly thankful that I got to write the episode with Josh, because he knows a lot more than me. And I learned a lot just about the difference between writing a pilot that's just your own brainchild and then writing something that you broke in a room with a group of people. And now there's like studios and networks and everybody's reading these things you write. And it's a way different, a way bigger experience than writing something for yourself. So I have to say that I was very, very thankful to have Josh helping me through all of those. So my advice is find someone to write the episode with you who knows way more than you and can help you.
One of the unsung heroes of this episode is Randall Groves and his team of set builders and set designers. The episode wouldn't be as special as it is without what they created for the Leverage HQ. We spent hours just sort of scouring a little video that we had of what the set looked like and what we could use for this episode and all the different corners and pieces of the set and things that we could build if we could create a room off this door and all kinds of things. But there's, you know, the HQ is such a character in this episode more than any other. And it wouldn't be what it is without that incredible creation from Randall and his team.
Josh, since we have you here, I realized you also happen to have written the double-edged sword job. And I noticed a name on a piece of technology that was Elena. Is that an Easter egg and a nod to this Elena?
It's a nod to this Elena. I asked her if it was okay if we used her name. There was a name that we wanted to get that didn't clear. It was, you know, it was a comic book character name. And it was like, well, I foresee we're going to get into this problem with any comic book name we use. So I'm just going to pull one, you know, out of the ether. And Elena had, you know, been there from the beginning of the, you know, the run. And I felt like, you know, this was long before she got her opportunity to write Paranormal Activity. I wanted her name to be on the show somewhere. It seemed to work for the, you know, for the character or the, you know, the AI character in that episode. So worked out.
Yeah. I was like, this is a very specific spelling of the name Elena. I have a feeling I could put this together.
It was funny because after everyone watched Paranormal, like all of my friends and family watched Paranormal Activity, they were like, oh my God, congrats. And then it was like every single one of them 2 days later was like, oh my God, congrats on being AI. I was
like, well, thank you both so much for chatting with us about the Paranormal Activity job and for giving us a little bit of Easter eggs about the double-edged sword job. Thanks, guys.
And here is Dean Devlin. Listen, this man does everything for Leverage, writes, directs. You'll see. Check it out.
We are here with the man himself, the one, the only, the man in charge, the man who makes all of this possible, not just our show, but the show that we are talking about. Dean Devlin, hello, welcome.
Thank you, thank you. Hey, it's great to be here. Good to be with you guys.
I'm so excited to have you. You know that I am a big fan of the show. So let's talk about being part of the show in the resurgence, in the chapter two. You are not just executive producing, you are directing, you are writing. What is it like to be so involved in this show right now?
You know, it's odd because from the day the original was canceled, I kept trying to get the show back on. I mean, I must have come up with 50 different versions of the show. But when you finally, you know, get that green light, it's like, all right, we have a version of the show, we're going to do it. You know, the question is it going to work? You know, do the actors even remember who these characters are? I mean, you don't know. And I'll never forget, we had the very first table read for IMDb. And within 2 seconds, they were all the characters again. I mean, it was like, I felt like I'd stepped in a time machine and no time had passed. I mean, Parker was Parker immediately. Hardison was Hardison. I was just, it was like, what the hell?
Like muscle memory or something. Yeah.
Well, and I don't think they ever let go of the characters. You know, sometimes an actor, when they finish a part, they literally will say goodbye to a character. I don't think they ever did, because those characters were still really alive in them. And I think, you know, when you think about like Aldous has done such amazing work, but it's almost all intense drama.
Yeah.
You know, so I think there was something for him about getting to be silly again, getting to be fun again, you know, using his comedy chops. You could just see the joy he had when he started doing it.
It seems like you all have a joy. Like I tell people all the time, like it's when you're watching it, it feels good to watch it. But I know it's because it feels good to have made it, like that set. So what is that energy like on set when you walk back in day one of chapter two, resurgence? I don't like the word reboot because I think this is something totally different. But what is it like day one walking on set?
Well, you know, professionals will always do good work because they're professionals. It's their job, you know, and they do good work. But when people actually really love something, you get something special. And the minute we were on set, you could just see that these people cared about each other. And by the way, not just in front of the camera, because so many people behind the camera had been on the original show. So these actors, they knew our costume designer. They knew the DP. They knew our production designer. There were all these relationships happening in front of and behind the camera. It was strange for me because in many ways, I'm kind of like the papa of the show. And I was directing the first two episodes. But I had this mask on, and so it was really hard to direct, especially because I'm a former actor, so I tend to direct with my face. So I'd be like this, and they didn't know, did I like the take? Did I not like the take? Was I happy? Was I unhappy? You know, so it was an odd way to do it. But I think it also bonded us in a way. It's like everyone wanted to come back and do this. And suddenly we were doing it against all odds with 8 hurricane shutdowns and COVID restrictions. And everybody had to pull it together, not just for themselves, but for each other. You know, everyone had to watch everyone else's back. And I think that just made it all the more special.
Yeah, you keep working with, you know, family, with your teams, with the people you've worked with on previous shows. Why is it so special that you guys keep wanting to work together?
Well, I think a lot of it is like, you know, you see this in theater where they'll have rep companies, you know, where the same actors will do it together. And I think part of it is you develop a shortcut, you know, in the language. And there's also a trust. You know, I know I can say things to Christian Kane that any other director would get punched in the face for. But when I say it, he trusts me, you know. And I think the same with some of the other actors as well. Is that the amount of time we've spent together, that they know if I ask them to do something that's out of their comfort zone, I'm not going to embarrass them. I'm not going to make them look bad. So they're willing to take a risk with me. They're willing to try something that maybe goes against their instinct, because they know that if it doesn't work, I won't use it. You know.
Yeah, we've heard from the actors that they feel like they can give each other jokes to play and really, like, you know, suggest things. I feel like that's unique on a show like this, because usually, you know, everyone is trying to be the star.
For sure. And I think the great thing about doing a show with an ensemble is that they know this only works if they all elevate each other and not try to step on each other. So you get this this generosity with the actors that's not common. You know, I mean, you step on some of these sets and you can't believe the egos. They all checked their egos aside a long time ago. And again, because of the situation we were in, we didn't have the time for anyone to be,
well, I'm time for your drama. It's already enough drama in the actual real world. Yeah.
And there was a real appreciation to get to go back to work. Yeah. Especially, you know, Louisiana got hit really hard.
Yeah.
You know, they had not shut down before Mardi Gras, and Mardi Gras turned into this super spreader event, and their population got hit especially hard. So when suddenly here was work and people could go back to work, and in an environment that, while it wasn't perfectly safe, it was safer than almost any other environment. We went way above and beyond to keep people safe, and everyone really appreciated it, and they all wanted it to succeed. So I think it added to the specialness.
Formerly living in the state of Louisiana, just the breath that the city of New Orleans breathes into anything, I think, like, I would say, like, okay, yeah, when I talk about this show, like, yeah, we have stars, the ensemble, but the setting in and of itself really breathed life into this season too.
Well, you know, people forget that the only original art form that was ever invented in the United States was invented in New Orleans, and that's jazz. It's the only contribution to art that we are solely responsible for. And that's part of what makes that city so special, is that on one hand, it's the birth of a real serious culture. It's the center of so much art and freedom and freedom of thought. And conversely, it's also incredibly corrupt and dangerous. And so it's like you've got, it's kind of criminal and kind of
playground for our team. Really,
it really is. It's kind of like a Casablanca. You know, it's kind of, it kind of fits the team better than any place we ever set it before.
Well, let's talk about the different settings, because, you know, the original series started in L.A. and then was set in Boston, then Portland. So although shot a lot in Portland. Why New Orleans?
Well, I think we wanted to, you know, really reboot the show, to let it have its own life. And because the original Leverage traveled everywhere, it was hard to find someplace that we hadn't really been. So New Orleans was kind of perfect that way. I think the history of it, the rich culture, the music, the visuals, it kind of just fit who they were as grifters. And then, you know, I've shot there before. Noah Wiley and I did the Third Librarian movie there, and I did a feature film there. And we just liked it. You know, we liked the cruise there. We liked being there.
And the food. The food is everything.
We didn't get the food.
No.
Because of COVID, we're all at home making, you know, macaroni and cheese.
Not peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. We're all good occasion food out here. Yeah.
But yeah, no, that we're hoping, you know, if we get a season two, you know, I think we're all going to gain a lot of weight.
when we're going to manifest that, because yeah. I'm sure that the fans, we're going to manifest, we're manifesting that.
It's up to you.
Season two, because I know the fans really want it. I want to, like, draw a little bit of attention to them. First off, I can't imagine how it feels to be so wanted after such an extended amount of time. Like, when you saw the response, were you shocked at all, or were you like, I expected this?
I was relieved.
Oh, that's good.
Because not one day, and that's not an exaggeration, not one day went by where I didn't get at least one DM or one tweet that said, where's Leverage? When are you bringing Leverage back?
Like, I'm trying.
And so I knew that there was this need and this desire. But the thing was, we felt that same thing. We wanted it back. We wanted to do it again. So, you know, this opportunity came. We were so excited to do it. But you never know, is this going to be what they wanted? Or are they going to feel like, oh, they messed it up? You just don't know. I mean, we liked what we were doing. We felt good about it. But until the public sees it, you don't really know. So once that kind of avalanche of social media started hitting, we all kind of went, oh, thank God.
Like, well, you could take like a breath, like, okay, good.
Really, it was like that. It was like, because one part of my brain was like, they're going to hate it. They're going to say you screwed it up. So it was great to see that response, both critically and from the fans.
If you've been playing along with us all season long, we are playing Bingo. If you want to get yourself a card, you can check it out at After Leverage on Twitter. We also want to make sure we note that we were inspired by at Leverage OT3 on Twitter to do Bingo this season. So print yourself a blank one or check out the one that we made and follow along. Here are some of the Bingo pieces that we found. We found emotions. Sophie asked Parker why this case means so much. And she said the one thing she's afraid of is the one thing she doesn't understand. And I believe that this is a callback actually to The Future Job, where Parker doesn't like psychic and she fears ghosts. We also have this moment where Sophie says she talks about how grief can impair judgment. And that's those are the emotions. Again, the OG reference back to the original series. We have the backlash effect. It's definitely a reference to The Future Job, where we can't tell Tina. We have to show her all the clues and she has to figure out for herself. And Parker tells Tina that she used to believe in psychics, but she doesn't mention that it was Tara who helped her. If you all remember Tara from the original series, that was one of her episodes It's one of my favorites, actually. We don't have a Let's Go Steal, but we do have Let's Go Con Ourselves, a Con Man, said by Brianna, so I'm counting it. Sophie, here's what I'm counting her acting, because when she was Estella, it was so over the top. It felt like Sophie acting. But once she does the gloat, she then turns to Con Sophie. And so I'm counting it as acting. I'm counting it. And of course, we do have the gloat where Sophie goes down to gloat and Parker and Tina watch from above. Even though it's interrupted, I'm counting it as the gloat. And Parker doesn't necessarily jump off something, but she does lower Tina down from the third floor. So it counts as jumping off of something tall. Also, I need to shout this out. Brian McCann on Twitter said that they added Parker descending from the ceiling, cereal, drinking straight booze, and Elliot's growl to their bingo board. So if you want to add those, go ahead. I really love this bingo game. So join us every time. Get your own board. And that's it. How did you do? Did you get a bingo? Did you get a blackout? I don't think you got a blackout unless you had a whole bunch of other stuff that we didn't. Tell us on Twitter at After Leverage. But stay tuned because we still have even more coming your way. We still have more from our chat with co-showrunner Kate Rourke, so check that out.
I know that the Halloween episode, the Paranormal Hacktivity Job, is a fan favorite. Tell me about this episode and why you think it's so beloved.
I'll tell you that I was watching these shows with my son, who is seven, and he's seen a lot of them in different cuts as they've come in over the past year. So I watched episodes 1 through 4 because I was going to be ready for this particular conversation we were going to have. And then I showed him episode 5 and then I'm like, let's go to episode 6. And he's like, no, we're watching this again. I think that the reason that it struck a chord is that it's our girls together and they're having a great time and they're finding a rhythm with each other that they haven't had the opportunity to do so before. So I think that it's a lot of fun. It's also especially a lot of fun watching Brianna, you know, just explode Halloween everywhere. It's a lot of fun watching these criminals just goof their way through a haunted house. They're completely outmatched until they're not. I just think that it's one of our most fun episodes, and I think that that's why fans respond to it the way they do.
I also want to say that I love how much Brianna, as you said, explodes with Halloween-ness. It feels very reminiscent of Parker with Christmas.
Mm-hmm. Yes, very much so. You glom onto certain things. And one of the things that I glommed onto over the course of our pandemic was just how crazy everybody went with Halloween decorations this year. And I'm just like, this is actually so cheerful for me to see everybody having everything out. And New Orleans went massively all out above all everybody else. So it was just, I just really love the idea of delving into Halloween and having a character who just loved it as much as it seemed like the world did this past year.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you for talking about all these episodes with us. We are so excited for more episodes. And now I'm going to send it back to you, Yael Teagle and Felicia Michelle in the studio.
Listen, we know that this show would not exist at all if it were not for the amazing fans. Literally, you guys are the best. And you guys are super talented as well, including some artists. So this is a look at some fan art that we have to show you guys this week. If you'd like to submit your fan art, you can DM us at After Leverage or at Yael Teagle. And it's Felicia Michelle to have your art featured here on episode.
The official Leverage Redemption After Show is part of the Electric Surge Network on Electric Now. We recommend checking out some of our other original content like Inglourious Trekspurts, The 4:30 Movie, and Best Movies Never Made. Finally, a very special thank you to Bill Ritter, Patrick Meany, and everyone at Electric Surge Network, our producers Natalie Michelli, and of course, Dean Devlin, without whom this show would not be possible. Thank you again to our wonderful guests this week. We love having you here. And next episode, we are going to have even more. We have Dean Devlin. We have more from Christian Kane.
Yes.
And we are going to have some Noah Wiley joining us. Of course, we're going to have more games. We're going to have more bingo. So don't miss it next week. Until then, I'm Yael Teagle.
And I'm Felicia Michelle.
And this has been a very distinctive podcast.